the Beagles!
Well, welcome back to the Blue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, Almighty Baller Network, Dash Radio,
wow.
Brian,
wow.
And Mike. iTunes if you want to download this episode and more episodes of the same thing. Brian.
You are on fire today, Mike. My God.
Well, we are jazzed up. It is now 8:33 in the morning here. We had just done a early morning interview with international bass reporter David Pick, who, I don't know, it was about 30 minutes in length, dropped a lot of news nuggets all over us.
He was dropping bombs everywhere, Mike. That was pretty good.
So you'll hear that coming up, and then after that we'll do news around the league and sort of say goodbye and thank you for listening. But I think David, the biggest thing out of that interview for me was that Milos is not a sure thing to Brooklyn. And
No. In fact, he seemed to think that it was not a very sure thing at all, Mike.
I mean, I'm not heartbroken, but I do think it's funny that we've built up Milos to be like this mega super savior, and now he's probably not going to come here.
I don't think anybody really thought of him as a mega super savior. I don't know.
I don't know, Brian. People, there's so much interest in, like, our last pod had so much interest that I think it's interesting that I think people are sort of looking for hope in different places, and we know the draft is unlikely to bring that much. Free agency is going to be difficult. So, like, there's this mythical third rail of basketball.
It's nice that there's, like, the new world is out there that you can pick from.
Yeah, instead of looking west, we're looking east.
Yeah.
And we're trying to find our gold that way. And I don't know if the gold's going to be dug up in the ground. We'll see.
I think it will, Mike. I get a special feeling about these scouts.
So, why don't we do this? Why don't we just let the interview play? And then we'll come back and we'll do news around league. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sounds really good.
All right. This is our interview with David Pick, international basketball reporter. All right. Well, joining us on the news line this morning is he's living in Israel at the moment. David Pick, international basketball insider. You know, if you're a Nets fan, if you follow on Nets Daily, this is someone you've probably read from a lot already, at least the news and nuggets that he's dripping out of Euro basketball. David, thank you for joining us on international borders. This is really great. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. No problem. How you doing? What is it? 7:30 a.m. in the morning over there?
7:53. I was telling wow. Brian here is here as well, that usually I'm not up this early, but I know that's not even that early, but it's a whole different lifestyle this early in the morning.
What's the weather? Sorry, go ahead.
No. It's Independence Day out here. So, middle afternoon, everybody's barbecuing. I can't guarantee that I would have been available at around 7:50 in the morning, so this is much better.
That's perfect. It's Independence Day in Israel? Wow, I am Jewish, and I did not know that. I'm a bad Jew. I feel really bad.
Well, I'll never forget it, because, you know, I live here, so you won't forget that, my wife was born on the 4th of July, so I won't forget being in America on Independence Day. So, you know, I kind of get it from both angles.
Is it a similar thing? Is the celebration like a similar way 4th of July is over here? Or what's the difference, I guess?
You know what? It is. There are a lot of similarities. But then again, big differences, because cities kind of shut down. Main roads are blocked. Everybody's walking the streets. You know, the stores are open till all hours, and then today everything's shut down. You know, you can't find even a supermarket, you won't find open. You know, fireworks till late at wee hours of the night, and then that was last night. And today everybody's just kind of taking it easy, barbecuing. The Israel Defense Force, Air Force, had a in-air show with all their different fire jets and the F-16s and the F-15s.
Wow.
And the Hercules planes. So, you know, that's pretty cool. it's basically that. It's routine. It repeats itself a lot every year.
So let's get into this real quick. So have you always lived in Israel, or how did you become the international basketball expert that you are, and how are you overseas how you are?
Well, that's a good question. Expert, I don't know about, but I was born in Englewood, New Jersey.
All right.
And actually, first NBA game was to the New Jersey Nets, then Stephon Marbury team. And I was very young. And then after that, shortly after that, I moved to Israel. And I've been here for 20 plus years. You know, I have six siblings. I moved here with my parents. My brother lives in LA. My sister lives in Riverdale in New York. So I'm going back and forth. You know, I was just in Brooklyn for a game and about a month ago.
Who'd you see?
I saw Brooklyn against New York.
Wow. It was a game Brooklyn
won. Yeah. Porzingis was great, actually. Melo got hot at the end. The Knicks made a run, but it was short lived. That was great. And you know, just here trying to break as many stories as possible, you know, just trying to get my name out there like everybody else in the business. And you know, so, it's not easy.
So what's your ratio here? You're watching as much NBA as you are Euro basketball, or how do you balance those two?
It's pretty crazy because the games here, especially now, the playoffs, when it's not Sunday and I get lucky with an early evening game, then their broadcast is only between 2 to 5 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if I'm up all day, you know, if I wake up in the morning with my son and take him to daycare and then I start work and I go to games here, that means I'm up from around 7 a.m. till 5 a.m. the next day. So you just have to pick and choose the better games. It's not easy.
Yeah. So I was like, while I was preparing for this, now I don't watch a ton of overseas basketball, but I'm just like looking through these clips and like trying to like consume as much as possible. And there's something that I was noticing while just watching these clips, like the way that people even compile highlights is different in European basketball leagues. Like there's just a more top down, longer distance view of what players are actually doing. And like a highlight could be like a good seal, you know, like things like that. So would you say it's just in general, right, like demonstrably different scouting European players versus American players? Like, is just the way you go about it inherently different at all?
That's an interesting question. You know, I never heard that before, but it's true. It's true. You wouldn't see, an NBA player's clip showing a steal or a deflected pass. They're more highlight dunks or way from the mid half court, you know, beating threes or something like that. It's different in overseas because not everybody is a superstar. Players have to sell something else. They're players who are sole defensive players, you know, or guys who are come in for rebound, or they come in and make a screen or something like that. And you know, it's a different game to where they sell themselves seems differently. And you'll see a highlight clip of a guy who's just pick and roll and he'll pop, or he'll just screen and roll or something like that. I mean, it's really different, but you know, it's interesting because the basketball game in Europe is so different than what you guys know in NBA. And a lot of people have to understand that just because someone is good in Europe doesn't mean he's balling out in the league and vice versa. You know, I remember I put out a tweet a few days ago that Shane Larkin is drawing significant NBA interest, and he just turned down $1 million offer to re-sign with his team. Now, I titled this star, I think it was star point guard or something like that, and I think people in New York and New Jersey were like, wait, hold on a second, Shane Larkin and star? Okay, so this guy out here is the superstar. He's the second best passer in the EuroLeague behind Milos Teodosic. He's won multiple games at the buzzer. He's averaging double digits in points. It's just different. You know, I wouldn't say it's easier out here, but it's different than what people, you know back in the NBA.
And I think that's a good segue because so much interest from Nets fans is about Milos. The Nets have made such a big show out of going to his games, scouting him.
Right. They're not even trying to hide it. You know, they sit courtside, front row.
It's an interesting thing that they are so public about it. But so who is Milos? What's his NBA comp? What's his game like? I mean, just the basic of who is he as a basketball player?
So if you walk into Milos at a pizza store or at a laundry place, I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell a difference. All right. This guy is just is an oxymoron how he has nothing to do with basketball just from first glance. But he's a wizard with the basketball. Like, to be honest, I know the Nets and the media, you know, we'd love to link them together. But if I had to put my money on the table and say that Milos is going to the NBA, I don't think it would be to the Nets. Because, you know, knowing Milos, he's been voted by NBA GMs as the best European outside the league. And then EuroLeague GMs placed, you know, they gathered together and made the same vote. But they voted that they would sign Nando Zoccolo as their number one recruit. So, you know, Milos, he's the best passer in Europe. He has an extremely high basketball IQ. He's an assassin at the three-pointer. You can't leave him open. He's deadly. He's not a leader. He has trouble with practices. You know, Milos is a guy who doesn't like to put in the work, but when you put him on a basketball court in the game, he'll finish with 18 and 12, and he wouldn't even practice for 3 days prior. You know, lately he's been having some injections in his heel. He hasn't been 100%. He's been sitting out practices, and then he comes into a game in the second half because Chester's struggling, takes over completely, and they win the game. This guy has been practiced for 3 to 5 days. That's just how Milos shit. Can he do that in the NBA? I don't think so. He can't defend. You can't put him in front of a Westbrook or a John Wall or a Stephen Curry. They demolish him. He can't even, like, I don't think you see him defending a cone. But he's just so brilliant at the offensive end. He does whatever he wants. Every player who plays against him comes in and says, I'm going to shut him down. I'm going to play tough with him. I'm going to go under. I'm going to go over. I'm going to do this. And it just doesn't work. Like, he does whatever he wants. But then again, there's that money time, crunch time factor. Does Milo show up for big games? Because he carries his team throughout the season, and he does it very well. He does it on a high note. He lets everybody know he's the MVP. But in crunch time, he has significant issues with delivering. And I don't know what it is. It might be mental. He might not be able to step up the plate. But even last year in the EuroLeague Final Four, Ceska was up 20, and then Fenerbahce came back. They forced overtime. Nando Zoccolo took over the game and won it for them. Like, when the game was on the line, it's hard for him to commit to his team making big plays. And I don't know why that is. Ceska definitely, you know, they had enough of that. That's why they brought Nando back from the NBA, signed him to a big contract. He's making more than Milos. I know Milos isn't happy with that. He wants to go to the NBA and play significant minutes, but I don't know what kind of team is going to give that to him because he doesn't respond well to losing. So can he play for a losing team? I don't think so. There have been some names that have thrown out there as potential contenders to sign him. You know, the Nets and the Jazz, Brooklyn and Denver. I don't see him going to the Spurs. Another name I heard is Minnesota Timberwolves. If Ricky Rubio goes, he can be hysterically fun to watch with Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine playing pick and roll with Kat. It'd be bananas out there. So, but you know, he can get that 30 mil because I don't really know the NBA salary cap. There's like a second level or second degree that he can get that kind of contract. But he'll just have to sacrifice playing because he can re-sign in Europe, make two to three mil. And then in the NBA it can be 5 to 6 mil a season. That's a significant difference, but you're slicing down his minutes, if not 50%, then a lot more.
So what is the like percent chance that he just stays in the international league? Like what is, I mean, in general, like, is that a thing that is happening more and more often that like the league's best players like kind of want to stay in the international leagues, or is it still, you know, the allure of moving to the NBA is still like the understood pursuit of the league's best players?
I think a lot of the good players want to go to the NBA. I think that's why Milos is talking about it. We hear a lot of other players talking about it, and there are a lot of second and third string players who are now going to make over $1 million next season because the NBA has taken the best centers and the best point guards and the best wingmen. You know, Malcolm Delaney was an all first team last year. He's like second or third string in Atlanta right now. That's where he wants to be. He's fine with that role. And he was the all first team EuroLeague, went to the Final Four last year. So now if the NBA takes Milos, then guys like Thomas Hurtel or Stefan Markovic or Stefan Jovic, who haven't really won anything in Europe and haven't really taken their teams to the playoffs and Final Fours, now they're going to have to step up. They're going to be the first top tier point guard. And, you know, it's by default because there's nobody else out there. The only guy who has, there are only two players who have rebuffed the NBA by choice are Juan Carlos Navarro from Barcelona, who went to Memphis 1 year just to say, you know, I'm going to do this and show that I can play. He's done it, went back to Barcelona, and he's, you know, the king of Catalans. And then there's Sergio Llull, who plays for Real Madrid, and the Rockets own his rights. And he's publicly said, like, he has no interest in playing in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's a god in Madrid. He's second to Cristiano Ronaldo on the football team in fame. And for what? To go play backup or sidekick to James Harden?
So you brought up how Milos may not go to the Nets, which may break everyone's hearts here in Brooklyn. So what is he looking for? You're saying it's winning is sort of the thing that he's looking for. What's his number one thing that he would – the team that he wants to go to in the NBA, what is the number one thing for Milos that he would want? And do you think the interest is that high that he basically could choose where he wants to go, that it's not like the Nets give him the most money, so he'll just go there?
Good question. Here's a theory that I have. You know, people have been asking me, why has Cheska Moscow been so accommodating, willing, you know, to bring back the Nets two or three times, you know, to watch him and scout him and possibly interview him. I don't know. You know, what's the angle there? Because why wouldn't they want to bring back the best point guard in the NBA? Why are they showcasing him off to NBA teams? The answer is because I don't think they want him back, and I doubt they'll bring him back. That's why they're so, you know, open about it. You know, teams coming in and Sean Marks and then bringing Kenny back. What is Milos looking for? He's looking for a winning team. He doesn't want to lose. He doesn't take losing very well. I know that from the inside of the locker room. I think familiarity is something that's very, very important to him. And the Denver Nuggets have that in, is it Jovic is the big man?
Yeah.
Jokic is the big man, right? Nikola Jokic?
Yeah.
And you know, they're really tight. They're really close. That's something that's been out there. That's something that I can see him helping them lure Milos over there. I don't know if Gallinari is going back. Definitely another upside. That's something that I could think could play a lot in the cards of, that he'll be dealing at the end of this season. Minnesota Timberwolves as well. You know, they had Petkovic. I'm absolutely positive that they talk if that happens. The Spurs, I know from the Spurs that, you know, it's just not going to happen. They're not really looking at him like people may assume they are. And the Brooklyn Nets, I just don't think Milos has time at 30 to start help an organization rebuild. And rebuild in what position? The Nets are going to give a rookie their starting role to a team that's trying to, you know, change the culture of the organization? No. So they're giving the backup role, so he'll play backup on a losing team that's trying to reinvent the culture? There's a lot of question marks that I don't think that Milos is going to go for going to Brooklyn.
So another thing that I want to sort of ask about with Milos and just the Nets in general. So you talked about the fact that his team has basically sort of let Brooklyn come in and say, hey, we're scouting him. Trajan right. Langdon's overseas, I think, pretty much all the time right now.
Yeah.
In terms of just across the board in the NBA, how large of a presence do the Nets have compared to other NBA teams at being at these games and scouting these players?
In terms of Milos, they probably have the most. I can, you know, they see him more than anybody. I know if other teams have been to Moscow, and probably some of them have, but not as much as the Nets have. And because the Russian brass is in Moscow, then they even watch the VTB League games. Like all these NBA GMs, they go to the EuroLeague games. They want to see him against top competition. But, you know, the Nets have those people who are there all the time. And in terms of other international scouting, I don't think the Nets are doing something that other teams aren't. You know, when they were in Bamberg, there were like seven other teams there. When they were in the French Cup in Nanterre the other week ago, they sent the scout there. There were like six teams there. And also when Trajan was in Gran Canaria, scouting a Latvian big man, there was RC Buford there at the same game. So that's good. That's a good thing. That means Nets have their eyes on good players and Farsi's out there as well. And they have that culture because Sean Marks is from, San Antonio. He was with the Spurs. But I wouldn't say they have an edge over other teams in terms of how many or what they're scouting.
So with this semi heartbreaking news that the Teodosic thing is less, less realistic than we initially thought.
No, this is great though. It's great to find this out.
He goes
out.
To the NBA, you'll see him in Brooklyn. He'll just play against the Nets.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And if he does sign with the Nets, then you know, I'm retiring for sure because I probably don't know much of anything.
But yeah, so just to like dig into some of the other prospects that some names that are being thrown around. But before we do that, like you probably hear this often, but if you had to say what the single most like or some of the most translatable skills regarding international players transplanting into the NBA is the passing versus speed of the game cliche still like mostly like true or is it just basically the same way that basketball works everywhere, which is that there are some players with some skills that work in the NBA and some that don't.
In Europe, that run and shoot like NBA teams do. No team has shot 22 threes like Houston buried San Antonio. No one plays at the Russell Westbrook or John Wall pace in Europe.
Right.
And I think with a lot of the fast guys, the high-level guys who have left Europe recently over the years, and with Bogdan Bogdanovic probably doing the same in the coming season. You know, I see a lot of less up and down tempo. Everything in Europe is more defense oriented, more aggression. I think all those comparisons are like kind of draining. You know, I think they're chewed way too often.
Yeah.
But there are players whose games can translate to the NBA. You're right. And right. I think Milos is one of those guys who is going to do great on the offensive end because he has range. He can play the pick and roll, shoot and pass. But then on the defensive end, it's going to be a nightmare. You're going to have to find defensive schemes where you literally have to hide this guy.
Right.
So, and then there's that. You know, there's a guy like Tyler Honeycutt who played, you know, he was drafted by the Kings and then tried to play in Houston and, you know, made his way overseas to Europe before he played a little in the D League. And now, you know, he won the Euro Cup in Russia. And now he's playing game 5 tonight, elimination in Greece against Olympiakos. If he wins, he's going to the Final Four. And he's a starter, and he's one of the best wingmen outside the NBA. Now, this guy was playing D-League minutes. He can play in the NBA. He can play above the rim. He can shoot. He's extremely
athletic. I was just watching the clips of him, and like Jamario Moon was the name that came to mind. For I don't know, something about their nice. Games seemed to nice. Nice. Does that feel accurate nice. At all?
Yes, I like it. Sure. I think Tyler is more skilled than Jamario.
Sure.
I think he has more all-around game than Jamario does. But in terms of athleticism, you know, he's really right up there. He just won the Turkish All-Star Dunk Contest.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like the comparison, actually.
Speaking of comparisons, so I was just looking through these various players. A bunch of them like jumped out at me. Nicola Melli, I you know, when watching as much footage as I can, his stats are pretty unattractive. So how do we? I just like there's some dissonance there. It's like this is a sort of like hotly scouted player who in video looks amazing. Doesn't seem to be playing that many minutes. Not generating that many points or you know stats of any kind. So like what is it true like? Like why is that? Why aren't his stats reflecting what he's maybe capable of?
Well, Bamberg run a very unorthodox system, and they have something that's worked out very well between an Italian GM and an Italian coach. Mm-hmm. Their GM worked with the Pistons as a scout a few years ago, and they're just building something different. You notice they only have one American on that roster compared to other teams where they have multiple Americans because they're trying to do something different. They're trying to play more team-oriented ball, high IQ basketball, you know, less run and gun, more execution, more make the right plays, make the extra pass. And, you know, they lost to all the big teams in Europe. They beat a lot of them, and they lost to a lot of them on a final execution play where they would miss a shot. Like, they had the ball in their hands. And they're just making huge steps in terms of being that smart organization with a great system. And a lot of agents and teams are sending players there to develop. So mm-hmm. Melly's minutes, you know, are, look at what he's doing. He's not playing big minutes. He's not posting huge numbers. And you have every single NBA team out there watching him.
Right.
Why? Because that's what he's supposed to do in that system. And the NBA teams know he can do better in their system. He's extremely intelligent. He's devoted to his team like no other player. The Nets are among a handful of NBA teams who wanted to interview him, sit down with him, talk to him after a practice. He declined. He said, you know, I appreciate the interest. I'm not sitting with anybody until the season's over. Mm. That's how respectful he is of the organization. He can shoot. He's a stretch four. That's a rarity in the NBA. He can put it on the floor. He can play the pick and roll. He just has that set of skills where he keeps NBA GMs drooling. They keep going back. And so, you know, that's for Melly. You're right. He isn't flashy and he isn't sexy and he probably won't be the biggest name that goes to Brooklyn. And the Nets fans are probably like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
But
that is another thing that I sort of wanted to get to dig down on is the fact that, like, when we look at the Chad Ford draft board or any Draft Express and you look at the stats of these European players, they're all 18 years old and they all score 2 points a game. Why don't these guys play more? Is it just the system in Europe that young guys aren't going to get that much run and that they're just going to be on the bench? And there used to be a belief that European teams would try to hide prospects and they wouldn't let them play that much. Why don't these really good young prospects play more?
Yeah, that's not happening today. They're not hiding anybody. Good insight, but they're not hiding anybody. Coaches today, and owners and GMs, they just don't have enough patience to try and develop these prospects and give them significant minutes. Because if you lose one or two games, then, you know, you might not make the EuroLeague playoffs, or you might drop in the standings of your league and make it harder for you in the long run. So a lot of these kids are developing in practices. All right. So Sean Marks goes to Barcelona for this one game. And then they call up Rodius Kurins from their farm team affiliate in the second division just so he can play 6 or 7 minutes in a blowout game. You know, that's how it is, because he can't play in the first team. And they're terrible this year. They have stars, but Antetomic, Tyrese Rice, Petri Koponen, and Navarro, they're terrible. And if you give this guy significant minutes and you're selling him to an NBA team if he goes to the draft, then you didn't do anything. And that's what I think. I think Mau Dulo is a point guard who played college ball, and he's in Bamberg now. He's playing significant minutes, all right? It's not like Maccabi Tel Aviv with Dragan Bender when they were sucked in the EuroLeague, and then they dropped out of the EuroCup. They did everything to showcase Dragan, everything possible. It's different.
Why
it's
do they like do that, anymore. Though? Why do they want basically their players showcased? Like, they don't get a fee, right? It's not soccer where they get some sort of finder's fee.
With Dragan situations, you know, it's the average NBA buyout. You know, if it was $1 million and then the team chipped in and the player chipped in, so they got some money back. And then with that millions, they went and bought somebody else. So sometimes teams make those kind of calculations. But, you know, if you're good, then you're going to play. And the interesting is, the thing is that, you know, the Nets were scouting in France not long ago. And there's a guy there, Matthias Lessort, all right? He's power forward, 6'9", 21. He's playing significantly, and he can be, I think on Chad Forbes, he's a late second rounder. So, look, they're going to scout these guys who aren't even first rounders, all right? The level of talent has dropped, because if these guys were superstars, they would be playing.
Yeah, I watched some Matthias Lessort clips. He's Ben Wallace a fair comparison, or is that doing a disservice to his offensive skills?
Who? What name? What name?
Ben Wallace.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No,
it's totally different, much more developed offensively.
But how you could compare one of the best NBA defensive players in history to a second round pick out of France? That's pretty. Stretchy.
He was undrafted. I'm saying at the time, you know, at 21, Ben Wallace. That's what I'm saying.
I gave you Jamario Moon. Don't push your luck.
Fine.
Fair enough. Love Jamario Moon.
No, that's cool.
So the other, so I was just like going around looking at these highlights. If Melly is your system player, then is so in terms of like plug and play, more of a gunner is Edwin Jackson, sort of like the guy that's on this list that is can be leaned on to, as a microwave player, or is that a total misunderstanding of his game as well?
Microwave player as a stash kind of guy?
Yeah.
Who you're gonna
like basically up? Like I just watched him make like a lot of the most difficult shots out of any of the players that we watched. And is that a translatable skill that you can see him doing in the NBA?
Absolutely. He's a maker of tough shots. He's played on some very good teams. He's played at the highest level in Barcelona and Malaga, and now he's in Estudiantes. He played for the French national team with all the big names that you can think of. And he's the number one scorer in Spain, which is widely recognized as the toughest and best competition in Europe. So if he's making those shots against good defenses and structured teams and smart coaches and really skilled players, then he's going to make those shots in the NBA. He wants to go to the NBA. I know teams have traveled there and they watched him and they spoke it to him. And he's had, I think, 220 plus games while the Nets were there watching him. He's instant offense. There's nothing about it else. That's what he does. He's instant offense. He can do that in the NBA. Not a question in my mind about it. A name that you should also think of is Andres Pacheknik.
Yeah, right? I wanted to ask about him.
That's on my list.
Yeah.
There you go. He's 7'2", 21, Latvian. He went to Gran Canaria because he saw how they developed Eddie Tavares. And he liked what they did with him. And, you know, he's just like a late bloomer compared to Porzingis.
Yeah.
But, you know, growing up, they were really the same thing. A lot of people were projecting them, you know, to kind of grow up together. But Porzingis blew up quicker. And now there's this game that Trajan was at the other week. And this kid had 24-7 in 21 minutes. He shot 11 of 13 from the field. He was dunking over people. He was spreading out and shooting threes. He gave a ball handoff, curl. He faked pick and rolls and ran back for the alley-oop. I mean, he's so smart, and you see a lot of shades of Porzingis in him, obviously because they're good friends. They talk a lot. They play for the same national team. So, I mean, he's climbing. He's climbing a lot. I think he was projected early second. He's probably climbing. He's first round now. Not a doubt in my mind. The Nets have, what, picks 22 and 24? I like to see TJ Leaf get one of those. You know, he's Israeli. That's my guy. But Andres can get one of those picks too.
And you mentioned, I never noticed it.
Because here's the thing. RC Buford is not going to that game to see Edwin Jackson. With all due respect to Edwin, he's going to see a prospect who you're going to stash somewhere, bring him back when everybody's sleeping, and all of a sudden, 20 minutes down the road, this guy is a 2-6-time All-Star, something like that. That's the Spurs cult.
And you mentioned, how do you say his name? Rodion Kurić from that you said that they brought up with was it FC Barcelona? Kurić
Barcelona, Rodion Kurić Barcelona.
So what type of game is what's his game like? Because you see again the Euro stats, it's like there's nothing, and that he's in the B division, and you're like, oh well, exactly. I don't know about that.
And that's also why it's hard for you to judge those kind of stats, you know, because that level isn't really high level. Mario Hezonja was playing also for their foreign team, and he got a lot more minutes in the EuroLeague. You know, he was winning games in the EuroLeague, Hezonja, before he went to Orlando. I can't really pinpoint and tell you what kind of player this Rodion is, because I haven't seen a lot of him, because, you know, with all due respect, I'm not watching a lot of Spain LEB gold games. But, you know, obviously the Nets see something in him. You know, he's 6'9". He's a wingman. He's only 19 years old. I mean, other guys we're talking about here are 21. Okay, Lesort's 21. Pachetic's 21. This kid's 20. This kid's 19. So they're 2 years they have an advantage of.
Yeah. Another name that I had not seen, but like fell in love with, is Facundo Campazzo. Is this a person who's actually going to be good, or is it just amazingly fun to watch?
He is amazingly fun to watch. The Argentinian Tasmanian Devil. Yep.
Yeah.
He is extremely fun, unpredictable.
But, Yeah, is that something that can translate to the NBA though? I mean, and in general, has he had success with that version of the game right now?
Yes, he has, because he's playing on a small market team.
Yeah,
he's making only $300,000. His team's paying $200,000. Real Madrid's paying $100,000 to complete his salary because he's on loan over there. They might bring him back next year, though. He doesn't want to go back. He doesn't want to be in the shadows of Sergio Yul. And most likely Luka Doncic is going back there too. This kid's 17. He's supposed to be a top three lottery pick in 2018. So he doesn't want to kind of fall between the cracks over there. I think the best comparison to for him is Raul Neto in Utah. I didn't give Neto much of an edge or a chance to play in the NBA. I thought he wasn't ready, given his team in Spain didn't even make the playoffs. He wasn't shooting well, probably 25% beyond the arc at the time. And I think Campazzo's doing things better than he is. And there's definitely room for him in the NBA if you see Neto. You know, he reminds me a lot of Pat Beverly, but, you know, he's not tenacious
right.
as Pat is. He's not as good a defender, but there's similarities there. They're both, you know, all in your grill. Small yeah. pests kind of players. Right. And that's Campazzo. And he's extremely exciting to watch.
Yeah.
He's adventurous. He'll give you that behind the back, between the legs, pass, things. He mocks players in games.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching that in the highlights. He literally, like, does the, like street ball go around the person's back. Yeah, he's amazing. So, penultimate question. The big finale, the big hyperbolic one that you probably don't want to answer. But so who are the Nets going to get? Who are the Nets going to get at the end of all this? Is there one name that seems to be rising above the others in any meaningful way? Or is it a pretty wide pool at this point?
That's a good question. When I read the Nets Daily article,
mm-hmm.
You know, I love that handle.
Great plug, by the way.
Credit where it's due.
Yeah.
There was a paragraph in there. So who do the Nets like? Hard to tell. Who are the Nets going to get? No one knows. Who are the Nets going to sign? How do we know? Like that was on point. Because mm-hmm. no one knows. But, if I had to name my top three, contenders that the Nets can get, or will put everything in to get, one would be, Pacheknics.
Mm-hmm.
Because they sent Trajan there. And Trajan played in Europe for a very long time, and Trajan is extremely involved in the scouting. And if they sent him there, then Trajan, we like this kid. We want to see what you think about him. There has to be something in Efes in Turkey, because Trajan went to that game and Sean Marks went to the game of the same team. Mm. That team has Tyler Honeycutt and Thomas Huertel. Thomas is a free agent, French point guard. Tyler has an option for $1 million next year. I don't see them taking Derrick Brown. You know, he's been in the NBA. He's done that. He's making $2.8 million.
It's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's pretty set. So Pacheknics, someone from Turkey, from that team, because they've seen him twice, and they're gonna go all in on Milos, because a coach doesn't fly out to see a game of somebody that they're not interested in.
Yeah.
Unless they're very interested in you. And, you know, with the drafts, it can be anybody. It's a good question. Daniel Theis is someone we didn't really talk about.
Yeah.
Okay. He plays with Melli in Bamberg. He's German. Chris Fleming, head coach of the German national team. He auditioned to a few teams last summer, Washington, Miami, Philadelphia. He's 6'8". He's a power forward, plays above the rim, high energy. It's just something that they like in Brooklyn. You know, they're all about energy and athleticism. Mm-hmm. You know, there's energy in that building. You know, that Barclays Center is unbelievable.
So you say. So you say.
Yeah. And I've just been there once in the game, and one more time I just got a tour of the place. So, I mean, there's energy in there.
No, it's true.
They just got to bring it, because they're flat way too often.
Yeah.
Well, David, thank you for joining us. David, you on Twitter is at IMDPick. I think that's right.
Correct.
A must follow. A must follow if, especially with the Nets this year, with international prospects that they seem they're probably all three picks could possibly be international prospects. So David's a must follow. Again, we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thanks, man.
So early in the morning.
Yeah, I know. All right.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Man. All right. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, Brian, you want to do news around the league?
Yeah, let's go right into it. What do you got, buddy?
It's the news!
All right, go.
So we had two playoff games last night, two interesting playoff games. I think the biggest one, obviously, is Rockets Spurs. I didn't watch too much of it because we had to get up for this interview with the international basketball reporter.
Yeah, that's why, huh?
But I don't think it really matters. Yeah, well, and also because I was watching Red Carpet, the Met Ball, Met
Busted.
Gala.
I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to blow up your spot, but I knew what you were up to.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love a good red carpet. Doesn't matter what it's for. I would watch red carpets pretty much every week, I think.
Really?
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, this one was super interesting because if you don't know, the Met Ball is the pinnacle of fashion.
There Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't care about fashion, but like...
Wait, I've not known this dimension to your personality. That you care about fashion at all is...
I don't.
Blowing my mind.
Okay. I like seeing beautiful people. I like it. You know, I like being around. That's why we're friends, Brian. I like seeing beautiful people.
That's kind of you, you little creepy little voyeur.
The Olsen twins were there last night, though, which I think is important. And they look they're evolving into people that seem like they like elves who've come out of wood trees. That kind of seems what they look like these days.
Like Orlando Bloom.
Yeah. Orlando Bloom has shifted now back to being looking like a human. But they seriously look like they were carved, the Olsen twins carved out of wood and not carved well. Not well carved wood. Anyways, so the headline sort of last night was the Rockets 126-99 over the Spurs. I think they shot something like 50 threes in the game against the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
This is the recipe. So I'm already discounting the Spurs series. This is the recipe if you're going to beat the Warriors that you need to have. You need to shoot 50 threes and make 45% of them, which they did.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see. It's not like game one is like overreaction central. Everyone's going to go crazy over game one.
Dude, that was a whooping of I guess record breaking merit. You know, that was a real whooping.
And it was a whooping from start to finish. And it was and it was like, if they're going to shoot 53s, how do you stop them from shooting 53s? It's like, if they're just going to do that and make them all, then there's no way to defend it really properly. I'm sure the next game will be like 92-87 somehow.
I kind of like that they are saving some of their final form for in like classic anime parlance. They haven't revealed their final form yet, and now they're doing it in the playoffs. It's like, you thought we shot a lot of threes. You didn't even know the half of it. We shoot an insane amount of threes.
It's beautiful. And it's gonna even go up. Like, I mean, they're gonna break records. If they beat the Spurs, when they play the Warriors, there's going to be a game they're down by, let's say, 15 in the third quarter, and then it's just going to be threes. Every possession is going to be a three. Is that fun basketball, Brian?
It's more fun than
free throw contest.
than the free throw Dwight Howard experiment.
Oh my God.
So I'll take that. I mean, honestly, I like that. I mean, as much as I hate James Harden, I do like the Rockets in general because I like that they're hyper specialized. They make no bones about having a system, that they have a strategy that they're going all in on. You know, I like that kind of stuff. I like over specialization, you know. It's fun.
The team overall seems oddly underpraised. I know that like James Harden was the stats community MVP pick, and that people are saying they're the one team that could beat the Warriors in the Western Conference. But like, I don't feel like we fully have appreciated exactly what D'Antoni has done to this team to completely alter the disgusting mess that they were last year to make them now like just like the most stat evolved. What we need to do is only under the basket or three point shooting.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The trade for Lou Williams just showed how big their huevos were in going all in on this strategy. I mean, they're like, let's just add another smaller version of Eric Gordon if we can.
And I, yeah. I love that, like, the conventional basketball thing was like, oh, they need to add another center, like another right. big man. And I think they wanted Bogut. I think that they were in the running for that. So even that they wanted it. But then they're like, nah, screw it. We're just going to get the exact same. We're going to get James Harden, but like five evolutionary steps backwards, which is Lou Williams. Speaking of Dwight Howard, real quick, I sort of wanted to get this in because I'm a Wizards fan. I just watched the Wizards Hawks series. And, you know, whenever teams lose, then they have the exit interviews and blah, blah, blah. And coming out of Atlanta is that this is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is that Dwight is angry. He expressed anger after his exit interview about his deteriorating role with the Hawks. In that series against the Wizards, he played barely at all in the fourth quarter. He was a complete non-factor. The Hawks were better without him. And then Howard told reporters, it was very difficult. I want to play. I want to be out on the floor. I want to make a difference. I want to make an impact, and I can't do that on the bench. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Brian, I think I know the gut reaction for most people is like, oh, here is Dwight complaining again. Here's Dwight screwing up.
Oh, you got a hot ticket, sounds like.
This is what I'm going to say. The signing of Dwight Howard never made sense, right?
Right.
Okay, especially because for what the Hawks were. And I understand there should be some push for Dwight on internal pressure on him to say, hey, maybe I need to evolve my game a little bit. But to be honest, Dwight is who he is, and they signed him and hyped him up as the hometown boy coming home. Making it, he's going to make a big impact. He's going to replace Al Horford. And it's not really on him to change his game all that much if they signed him. They brought him in knowing he's going to be who he's going to be. It's like having Willem Dafoe in your movie and expecting him to be just like a straight man and not a total freak, basically, you know?
Sure.
Dwight Howard is the Willem Dafoe of basketball. You know, he is who he is. He's a very specific actor, a very specific player. And why would you ever sign him if he's just like, if then you're not going to even use him? It's just
I'm trying to think of a team that actually would benefit from having Dwight Howard on the team at this point. Like I can't really think of one.
That's the difficult. And that's the thing. It's like, well, like, and this would never really work. But like Boston, I know that they play the opposite, but they could use.
That's actually kind of a good
Dwight guy.
It's also that they're not like he does very bad, poorly with like an obvious other like star counterpart or whatever. And with a like, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is clearly like the star in that show. But for whatever reason, I think like it's seen as a sort of egalitarian team. I don't know. I think it's because of Isaiah Thomas's like slow rise to prominence that like maybe I'm just incredibly wrong and everyone just thinks it's Isaiah Thomas versus the world. Is that how people perceive them?
What?
The Boston Celtics. I'm trying to make a point that Dwight Howard like just generally is a jealous person and beefs with like an obvious like star counterpoint. But I don't see that happening with Isaiah Thomas for some reason.
And I don't see what happened with Isaiah because while this may not be like the perfect case, but Isaiah is like a ball dominant guard, but yet he will work in a pick and roll with a big guy. So like if Dwight and Isaiah were together, Isaiah would get Dwight the ball in pick and rolls where he just dunks the ball. Mm-hmm. Where in the Hawks, like Schroeder's ball dominant, but like they're not doing the whole regular pick and roll thing. They're trying to shoot threes the whole time. So were the Celtics, but I just think Isaiah, Dwight would work out well. They need a rebounder. I just think it's funny that I would love to bash Dwight Howard and like, you're a baby, you should evolve. But I also believe like he was brought in to do a certain thing and then they were like, nah, actually don't do it. And we're going to embarrass you and just put you on the bench.
You're giving them a little bit of a...
It never made sense. It never made sense to sign Dwight Howard. Just never did. It was ridiculous.
At what point is this going to cost him some money, though? I feel like he's still getting big contracts.
Yeah, I think he's got two more years on his deal at $20 million a year or something crazy. Like, he's not going anywhere. Another big basketball thing happened over the weekend, and that is the Big Three draft, Brian.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I cannot. Rashad McCants went first overall. This league is going to be unbelievable.
All right. So that's sort of the question. All right. So McCants went number three overall. Reggie Evans went third overall.
McCants went first overall, I thought.
Oh, what did I say?
Oh, you said third. Said Reggie. Okay.
Yeah. Reggie Evans went third overall. And then two big players that didn't get drafted that I wish did. Kenny Anderson, did not get drafted. And Steve Francis, which if you've seen Steve Francis lately, you kind of understand why.
Yeah, he didn't get drafted. I have. There's no way he can play a game of basketball, honestly. Like, there's just no way.
So,
who won this draft, Mike? Is it the Killer Threes?
Kenyon Martin's team gets A+ grade in drafting, in my book.
Wait, what's his team?
I don't even know. I think he drafted Rashad McCants. I think that's his team.
Trilogy,
right? That's his team. To be honest, I don't know. I'm Googling it.
Yo,
Google Trilogy, his team does not come up first. That's a shocker, right?
The team that immediately pops out to me is Killer Threes with Reggie Evans, Larry Hughes, and Brian Cook. I think you're in good shape there. But you know whose name really popped off for me was Mike James. I totally forgot about Mike James. You know Mike James?
No, I'm sorry. I'm looking at Trilogy. Yeah, Trilogy is Kenyon's team. Al Harrington's his co-captain. McCants, James White, love that, and Deion Glover. It's just dunkers extreme. But like, okay, so the funny thing about this is that like everyone's making a big deal that Iverson's a part of it, right? That Iverson's going to be the star, and we're going to get to see Iverson play basketball again. He didn't even show up to the draft, despite being the coach, captain, and star of his own team. It's like, and I saw like Michael Rapoport's doing like sideline for them, and he was there. It's just going to be, I don't know what to expect, Brian. Like, what's your gut reaction on what the basketball that we're going to see is?
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I just hope they mic up everybody in sight. Like, I just hope that there's like they go all in on the trash talk miking players up. That's honestly what I'm going to watch for.
I mean, it basically has to be the WWE or WWE. It has to be as show mini style as it can
get. Exactly, like they have to have like personal get into beefs and stuff. I would
love a running reality show in the form of like The Hills back in the day.
Why are you not in the biz? What is going on?
I'm telling
here?
You, and there should be a group of women who are also like bring in the basketball wives. That's why Kendi Anderson should have been a part of this. Bring in the basketball wives. They should be just as much stars as the players on this team. Like, give me some drama. Give me a thread line of plot from which I can then enjoy the basketball games. Because I think that's the way this thing takes off, is that I get personally involved in the outcome of these games more than just the score, but who I'm rooting for. Heroes and villains. Heels and heroes. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's baby faces, actually. Heels and baby faces.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'm excited at the big three drafts, like right or the big three start of the season is right after the NBA draft. So, you know, I think you and I, we're going to dig into this. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Oh, we're going to dig in.
A couple quick things. Okay. So this story out of Florida, not shocking out of Florida. A woman in Florida has been charged with prostitution after agreeing to perform a sex act on an undercover detective for $25 and some chicken nuggets. Okay.
Mike.
So question for you, Brian. First off, why are police in Florida sending out officers in a sting operation to catch a McNugget prostitute? Why is that? Is that what happens?
These are big questions. And honestly, you know, I attribute it to the just gradual decline of human society.
Good take.
That's
positive. That's an uplifting take. Second question for you. What fast food item is so good that you would exchange sex with an undesirable stranger for?
I had a cheesy gordita crunch from Taco Bell like 2 days ago, and it rocked my world. Let me tell you.
In which way?
They have some kind of sauce on this. I don't even know. I could not tell you one ingredient in the sauce. And it shocked me with how delicious it was. It's probably just pure chemicals, but holy, I mean, it was delicious. I don't know if you've ever had a cheesy gordita crunch, Mike, but they're pretty good.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been about, I think, about 4 years since I've had Taco Bell.
I mean, I can also dig in some Chick-fil-A and stuff. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. It's a lame answer, but the Chick-fil-A spicy chicken sandwich, that's it. That's my heaven. That's my last meal.
You know, they get it really right over there with just pickles. Like, they don't do the stupid lettuce tomato, that sad grade tomato that everyone's putting on their chicken sandwiches. Doesn't belong. It's just pickles. Just put the pickles on there.
Just one little pickle. The bread's not even that good, but there's something about the bread that mixes with the spice. It's like, it's almost like, all right, we're not going to give you that good of bread because we want you to have that pure chicken, spicy chicken flavor. It's just phenomenal and amazing, and I love
it. Good stuff. Good stuff.
The second fast food item, and also at McDonald's, did you hear about the Fork, Brian?
The Fork?
No. Fork. F-R-O-R-K. Did you hear about this?
No.
Came out yesterday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. McDonald's is has developed a French fry-centric utensil called the Fork, which is looks like a fork, but instead of the prongs being, you know, metal or plastic, they are French fries.
Really?
So it's part of their – so they've developed a new line of burgers, a signature burgers. You can get a guacamole burger at McDonald's now, which I don't know about. But the to part of that, they're selling with them a fork. So it's a plastic handle with like three little holder slots in them that you stick in French fries. And the, in the French fries, then you can dip it in to whatever. So it's a fork.
What is like any of that. That sounds
– yeah.
That sounds – I mean, obviously everyone's hating that, right? Everyone thinks that that's terrible.
I think everyone thinks it's terrible. But McDonald's wins again, marketing, 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 because we're talking about it on the pod.
Because here they are. Here they are in our head.
Well, it just doesn't have much practical use, right? I mean, there's like, nothing – you can't pierce anything with fried potatoes. That's not happening.
What are they trying to get you to do with it?
I think what the idea is that, like, you can, like, stick it – it's like a new way to eat fries, so you don't get your – hands dirty, but your hands are going to be sticking the fries into the utensil anyways.
What the hell?
It's unclear. I don't know. I just wonder who in like the McDonald's boardroom is bringing up. He's probably been sitting on the idea. He or she has been sitting on this idea for 15 years. And it's like, when are we going to bust this out? When am I going to bring it out of my briefcase? The fork. What is that?
Could you imagine how nervous you would be if you were about to present and your idea to a bunch of like super wealthy decision makers at your company and you pull out a PDF of a fork? God.
Guys, get ready.
I would have a massive panic attack 5 minutes before. I'm going to lose my job over this idea.
But how desperate that person has to be. The person's on the edge of desperation here, right?
They really are.
They're sitting. I don't know if you've ever seen Michael Clayton, but there's the scene when what's her name? What's the weird woman's name? Tilda Swinton. She's in the bathroom. She's sweating, just pure sweat, because she has like a wire on her or something. I forget what it is. But she's just purely just sweating through her blouse. Looks like she's about to pass out from a heart attack. That's what this guy or girl is doing inside the McDonald's boardroom. Just like, okay, this is my he kissed his wife or kissed whatever, their significant other on the lips right before and said, this may be my last day at my work, or it could be our future, and we're living in the Grand Cayman.
I'm going to be catapulted to Fork prominence.
Well, wild bad idea, but wild. You can get your fork. 100,000 of them will be given away when the new burgers are selling May 5th. This podcast is not sponsored by McDonald's. One last thing.
Okay.
Quadruplets from Cincinnati have all chosen to go to Yale together for school.
I saw this, yeah.
What's your thought about that?
Are you
pro – so we have the Lopez twins, all both going to Stanford. Are you pro all four going to Yale? And do you think one did not want to go to Yale and that they just were like, we have to do it because we have to get on the Today Show? What's your feeling?
The conversation here about whether they're doing themselves a disservice by like not meeting new people, is that the big?
I think that makes them less successful, doesn't it? Make if so. I don't know about you. So you grew up in New Jersey and you went to Syracuse. You could have gone to Rutgers, right? Which is a great school. But I feel like if you're continuing on in this group, you were born within a group and you've yet to evolve out of that group. So what are they all going to then? Take the same classes, all live in the same dorm, and never meet anyone else. I think that is stunting growth, Brian.
You know, I don't really care, but I will say, I like a real intimate family, like a little like mafia stuff. Like I wish I had three brothers, and you know, like were just like totally self-satisfied and like didn't have to make new friends. Like with three brothers and you probably have some like childhood friends and stuff. You don't really need that many new people in college. Like I only have like you and a couple other people that I met in college I still talk to.
That's so sad. That's so sad.
Why? I don't know. Mike, you went a little bit too into the college experience.
We were both in fraternities. I'm just a friendlier person.
You dedicated a little bit more of yourself to the fraternity, though. I think I stopped paying dues after the second year, and they kicked me out.
I think the moment you got in as a pledge, you dedicated yourself.
I really only liked being a pledge. I discovered like after the tables were switched, and I was supposed to do that to other people. I was like, this is terrible. This is not fun at all. I much prefer being the pledge. I don't. Maybe it's masochistic or something.
Well, whereas I became the pledge master and.
Is that true? Oh my god!
Yeah, Brian,
you're a sick pup.
Yeah, dude. It was weird. It was a weird time because like
that makes me feel weird about you.
No, it like I'm not even lying. It changes your mentality to be like to be the captor of people. Like you like become you're like whoa, this is like once I got out of it, I felt worse getting after being a pledge master than I did being a pledge. Like I'm not even lying. It's a
weird... it really went to your head, huh?
Yeah. And then I went to London. And then I got it all cleared up, so it's fine.
All right, Mike, I gotta go to work. Let's tie a bow on this sucker.
All right, so thank you for listening. We had David Pick on again. You can listen to that interview previously if you're not have already listened to it now. We thank David again for joining us at IMDPick on Twitter. Follow him if you will. Follow us at BK Glue Guys if you will. Download us on iTunes or wherever else you get podcasts. Almighty Baller Network - Radio and Nets Daily. So thank you for listening.
Mike, you are unbelievable. Hey, thanks everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening.